My opponent won't rule out raising taxes, but I will, and the Congress will push me, and they'll push again, and I'll say to them, read my lips. No new taxes.
We are going to build the wall. And who's going to pay for the wall? Mexico is going to pay for the wall.
The wall will come later. We're right now renovating large sections of wall, massive sections, making it brand new. We're doing a lot of renovation. We're building four different samples of the wall to see which one we're going to choose. And the wall is going to be built. It'll be funded a little bit later.
Imagine if he called out to the crowd, we're going to build samples of the wall. Samples of the wall. And we're going to make the American taxpayers pay for it. Imagine if he called out, like, we're going to repair the fencing. You keep cutting out that fencing part, James. He's talked about fencing today. The fencing. We're going to repair fences. We're going to tweets. Yeah, okay. Well, I guess we've had... Of all the callers today, we've had every single caller except one, who frankly I didn't understand. I think he was in the Jim Beam early. He's not in something. But only one caller wasn't outraged by what happened with this Nancy Pelosi-Chuck Schumer dinner. Joining us now, Senator Rand Paul, who himself has had a... Didn't you play golf with President Trump at one point, Senator Paul? Wasn't there a golf game, as I recall?
We have played golf. In fact, we're golfing buddies, and I think we'll probably play again.
Ah, so what do you think about this deal on DACA where there's, again, it sounds a lot like the Gang of Eight. You got a promise of enforcement, of some general idea of enforcement, with immediate amnesty.
You know, I think what we ought to be concerned with is something we call Potomac fever. And so I'm thinking maybe as a physician, I need to go over there and check the temperature of the president, make sure he's not caught this fever, which makes you forget your campaign promises. So, I think there is some room for give on the DACA thing. But the way I would look at it is this way. If you want to internally immigrate people who are here illegally, they should count against the totals of people who come in each year. So if we immigrate 1 million people in each year, and you want to internally immigrate people who are already here, they should be subtracted from the 1 million total, not added to it. And the other problem is if you do normalize them, you also are going to eventually normalize their parents, their cousins, their friends. It becomes a huge number, much bigger than the DACA number actually is.
2 million with the parents. And what we found out, and I think you said this a few years ago, Congressman Paul, that amnesty, begets a border surge. We've already seen 100% increase of people crossing the border since April. Because I think in the beginning people thought, uh-oh, they're cracking down on this border enforcement. But now there's a sense that if you make it here, no one's going to deport you because of this deal that they want to do.
Well, this is why conservatives like myself who have been willing and open to discuss some sort of compromise have said that border security has to precede any kind of forgiveness, because if you do forgiveness and don't have border security, it does then become an incentive for more people to break the law to come. So, you know, back in 1986, Reagan did one of these amnesty plans, but he did it and promised border security. And here we are 30 years later and we didn't get the security. So I'm not really willing to accept that security comes after. I think security needs to come first. And I think any deal, if there is a deal, should be that the DACA children are counted in the numbers of immigrants that we admit every year. They shouldn't be in addition to those that we admit.
Would you then say that something like this, Congressman, the RAISE Act, Senator Tom Cotton's RAISE Act, plus E-Verify, plus some real payoff on the wall together would be... you know, something that could we work with? I mean, those are really significant measures.
I think my only concern about trading immediate recognition of these kids, young adults, trading that for security to come is we have never really had much assurance that the security ever comes. And so I'm a big believer that one of the things you should get is an immediate, something that happens immediately, and that would be that they count against the normal immigration numbers. And this is a big deal, so we wouldn't be expanding immigration. We admit about 1 million people every year under the current rules. So if you're going to admit 1 million DACA children, they would count against that 1 million total, and we wouldn't be expanding immigration. So we wouldn't be making the problem potentially worse and waiting for security somewhere down the line. The other problem is when they put the comprehensive, the Gang of Eight bill forward a few years ago, they began loading it up with billions and billions of dollars of promised security. And in the end, it looked like a Christmas tree that was just as likely to bankrupt us as anything else. And I don't know that it was smart security. It was just very expensive.
Right. Well, and that's the rub. When they say massive border security, it's not really any specifics. It's always things like, well, we'll have a bunch of drones, and there's some big government contractors end up making a boatload of money, and they have drones. They have it's never real enforcement. It's certainly not interior enforcement of people who are here after having committed crimes.
I personally think that even without a wall, with the security we have now, if you had the will to enforce the border, you could. So, for example, if you had a helicopter station every 50 miles along the Texas-Mexico border, you had zero tolerance for illegal immigration, and everybody was returned within 24 hours, and you did that consistently for 6 months, you would then have border security. And this would include walls and sections, but I think the wall along 2,000 miles is going to be extraordinarily expensive and may never be built. The Mexicans certainly aren't going to build it. But I do think you can use all forms and means of technology that we have currently, and there's actually less expensive ways to do it, but what you really need is a will to do it.
But I know you've never been wild about this wall. I know that, Senator Paul, but here's the problem. The wall is a check against politicians who don't have the will. The wall is a check because it's a physical structure. You can't go back on a promise of a wall once it's built. It's built. And if it's enforced, it's enforced. But when we say, well, we're going to have this technology, right, and then we're going to have monitoring stations, that's different. I mean, a wall is a physical structure, but most importantly, he campaigned on that. And that has rated the number one or number two issues for Trump voters, that the wall would be built. And my listeners have said this, 96% of my people calling in today are like, this is a betrayal. This isn't done. We're done. I mean, I'm not kidding you. People are in a complete revolt on this issue.
I agree with you that it was a big theme of his campaign, and I think him changing course on this is at his own peril, that his base will be very, very unhappy with this. What I would say, though, is that really no matter what structure you have or no matter what security you have in place, you have to have laws that say that you can return people immediately within 24 hours,
yep,
and you have to not release people to let them relocate in other parts of the country. And then all that being said, I'm not against immigration. I am for adequate legal immigration. Everybody comes in officially, but I'm for zero illegal immigration. And I think we have to have the will to enforce our laws. And it has to be speedy justice. And it can't be months and months of letting people just go into the interior part of the country after they come in illegally.
We're talking to Congressman Rand Paul here on the Laura Ingraham. I keep saying Congressman. I'm losing my mind. You know why? Because I've been up all night because I've been I've been not happy about this. Senator, I didn't mean to demote you there. Let's talk about what we're also seeing in terms of U.S. military force being used in the Middle East, continuing the buildup of troops in Afghanistan. The president said, you know, he was against building up troops in Afghanistan, but now we're increasing them. What's the number? 16,000, something like that? I can't remember, but it's not an insignificant number.
Yeah, this was one of the things I liked about President Trump is that, you know, he said the Iraq war was a mistake. He said many times that in recent years that we've lost our mission in Afghanistan. The war's gone on too long, that it no longer is really about 9/11. And I agree completely with him. even recently as a few weeks ago, he said his instinct is that there is not a winnable solution in Afghanistan. But instead of going with his instinct and his better thoughts, he has surrounded himself with people who have now convinced him that there is some kind of winning plan in Afghanistan. And look, President Obama put 100,000 troops there in 2011, and the Taliban scurries over into Pakistan, the country that we give billions of dollars to in foreign aid, then coddles them, does nothing about them, and then as soon as our troop levels go down, they come back to Afghanistan. The bottom line is the Afghans need to fight. We've given them $1 trillion worth of war over there. We've armed them, we've clothed them, we've fed them, we've paid for their gasoline for 16 years. They need to stand up and fight if they want their country. I'm tired of sending our young men and women over there. And so, you know, I fought on the floor yesterday to force Congress to vote on whether or not we should be at war. Unfortunately, two-thirds of the Senate felt like we don't need to vote again, and that the president can do whatever he wants on war. And I think that was a big mistake.
Well, Senator Paul, I think you speak for a lot of conservatives, conservative populists, libertarians, who've seen our blood and treasure spilled all over the Middle East. And what do we have to show for it? We have a Middle East in turmoil. We have a massive refugee crisis. We have a Christian population that has been driven from their ancestral homelands to be returned to rubble with churches destroyed, relics destroyed. And I guess we made some success in progress against ISIS. But ISIS grew out of our Iraq war. And I think Donald Trump was right. The Iraq war will go down as one of the worst decisions made by any president of the last 50 years. That decision to go to war Iraq was one of the worst decisions ever.
Here's the thing, Laura. One of the things that I liked about President Trump also is he said, you know what, we're going to rebuild America. We're going to take care of our problems that we have at home, and we're going to quit sending our treasure overseas to people who hate us and burn our flag. And I like that about President Trump. And so, like with Harvey, you know, I've got family with 2 feet of water in their house in Texas.
Right.
And if we're going to help them, I think we should make rational decisions and say, you know what, why don't we not send it to Pakistan, keep that money at home and help Americans? So, you know, I proposed an amendment to pay for the Harvey aid, the aid for the hurricane. I said, let's pay for it by taking it from Pakistan and Afghanistan and all these other far-flung places that we send our money. And you know how many senators supported me? 10.
Well, that's where the party is. Their party is still the big military-industrial complex party. It's not the party of pragmatic military intervention. It's the party of, you know, it's still the war party, as far as I can tell, the Republican Party. We really appreciate it.
Interestingly, though, if you were to ask the people in the country, should we pay for the hurricane aid by cutting off foreign welfare to countries that often are burning our flag and chanting death to America? If we were to cut off aid to these crazy jihadists that we fund everywhere around the world in order to pay for hurricane relief here, I'll bet you I get 80% of the public vote, but in Washington I get the opposite because the swamp up here has been here forever, and they are more concerned with sending your money to a foreign country than they are in taking care of our own.
Well, I would say, Senator Paul, right in line with what you're saying on that, the American people also believe foreign welfare to foreigners in the United States shouldn't be the priority. It should be helping the homeless veterans, the hurricane victims. But the same analysis to foreign intervention, I'm telling you, that's what won this election for Trump. Take care of the American citizens before you start coddling people who are here illegally. People just want that. They don't want to waste money in foreign wars, and they don't want to waste money on foreigners here illegally. I think that's a winner platform. Doesn't mean we're not lacking in compassion, but we just can't take care of the world. It's impossible. Senator Paul, love having you on. Thank you so much. We'll take a break. Get to all your calls. 855-40-LAURA.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Thanks for listening to this podcast excerpt of The Laura Ingraham Show. If you'd like to receive podcasts of our complete shows, go to lauraingraham.com and sign up to become a member of Laura 365. Our Laura 365 members get commercial-free streams and podcasts of our shows every day we're on the air. And also, you can listen to the last 30 days of The Laura Ingraham Show. Be ahead of the curve. Join Laura 365.